Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
This podcast is the result of my passion for languages and for talking to people. I have conversations with language professionals who are willing to share their experience. We focus on their work, but also on how their love for languages has shaped their personal lives. I started my career as a researcher in terminology, but I found my passion for working directly with clients when I lived in the United States and started working as a language consultant for global companies like Sony, Apple, and Google. When I came back to Europe, I was introduced to the world of LSPs, where I had multiple roles: project manager, vendor manager, and terminologist. Now that I am fully dedicated to my own projects, I provide language services in English and Portuguese, mentoring and consulting for the localization industry, and of course, I'm also a podcaster. Find out more on LinkedIn or Instagram and get in touch if you'd like to explore how I can help you with your project. I am Rita Prazeres Gonçalves, the language worker. This podcast is also available on YouTube. Hi, everybody. He is really well known, I suppose. Maybe you don't know his face, but you definitely know his company. So this is Alfonso. Is it Gonzalez? I hadn't even noticed that you're Gonzalez. I'm Gonsalves. People in the States called me Gonzalez, so I'm used to that. When I lived in Spain, I was Gonzalez. So it's like we're basically in the same, we have the same surname, pretty much, just slightly different versions. So he is the founder of Translastars. But before we get to Translastars and other things that he has going on, we're going to start by just knowing a little bit who you are, and then we'll talk about your background and how we got here. So who are you?
That's the most difficult question.
I know.
On a personal side, I'm a father of two. I have two daughters. I'm happily married to a German translator. So everything is in the family. And I'm quite a familiar person, quite a family person. I like to have a quiet life, things like that. So I have a normal life in the south of Spain, where we have just moved from Germany. And then on the professional side, my life is way more active, so no time to be quiet for me. So I am the localization manager for a big company, for a big Swedish international company, Sinch. And then I also, as you said, I founded Translastars and the Localization Management Academy. And that's what I do for a living professionally.
Yeah, that sounds all very simple. But it's not, obviously. So let's dive into the beginning of times. So when you had to make that big decision of going to university, where am I going to study? Was it obvious? Was it not obvious? But I saw that your first BA, I suppose, I'm not sure if you have two BAs or two masters, but there's something there that is doubled, I guess. So was it to become a Spanish teacher? Was that the case?
No,
how did that start? No, maybe that was not the first one.
And in Spanish is like, well, licenciatura. It was a 5-year university degree, and it was on English language and literature, translation, things like that. That's what I liked. I was very lucky because my parents could afford to send me to the US when I was 13, so I learned some English, and somehow I started liking the languages, learning languages, and doing things with languages. And then when I finished that degree, I wanted to continue with translation. So my first, I have 4 master's degree.
And that's where I mixed things up.
My first master's degree was in audiovisual translation. Mm-hmm. So that's something that I enjoyed a lot doing. And it was really nice. I worked for several years as a translator, translating movies, translating TV shows, everything. And then I had two master degrees, one on English as a foreign language, as to become a teacher, and then as a foreign language also to become a teacher, and then another one in international business operations. So just to grow more, to upskill myself with other set of skills. But yeah, most of my life I have been working with translation or project management or localization management. That's what I also teaching at university. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's what I have done in my life.
Yeah, that's it. Well, we're done. No, so you finished. Let's start with the first round of college, because I suppose these four masters didn't come all in a row, and you were kind of able to understand as things went what could come next and all of that. So I guess that's what happens when you have a lot of masters, which is funny to me.
Yeah,
I know that there are a few people who have multiple masters, but I don't know if four was ever a number. Well,
four masters and then my PhD. The only thing that I didn't do was to deliver the thesis.
Oh, because, it's the same here. I understand.
Oh yeah. Well, then I got bored. I didn't have. I mean, the person who was going to be like my tutor didn't encourage me to do things. In the end, I gave up. I mean, not his fault, my fault, because I didn't do it. But yeah, no, the first part, the first time I took this master's degree on audiovisual translation, it was because I love cinema. I love movies. And I said, okay, well, where can I put my knowledge and combine translation, something that I love, and do something for a living? And then audiovisual translation master degree came up. It was the second edition. Mm-hmm. Then actually, the people who organized it, they founded ISTRAD, which is super famous now. It's in Seville. So it's where I studied. So I was the second part of the second edition of this master's degree.
Mm-hmm.
It was really, really good. I had really great teachers, professors, tutors there. So I learned a lot. And actually, it was one of those master degrees in which at the same time we were learning, we were offered a job by SDI. Because one of our tutors was working for them and they needed more people. Mm-hmm. So I was working while I was studying the degree. So that was great. And I learned a lot and I enjoyed it a lot. But then
So you guys in Spain, I lived there, right? But I basically watched, I watched everything, right? El Gran Hermano, 14 at the time. La Voz, I watched everything in Spanish, right? So I didn't focus too much on foreign shows, right? And when I watched those, obviously I also watched them in English without subtitles. So I didn't think about this subject too much. So, but when you say that you did your master's in audiovisual translation, and of course SDI, I know what they do. I've been there in the headquarters in California.
Oh.
So They're now something else. You know, I suppose.
You know, I know a Japanese company acquired them.
Exactly. But they, like everybody and their mother, knew. A lot of my friends worked for SDI. I guess all the people that I know worked for them. So they were like all over the place. But I always ask myself, so when you study this in Spain particularly, and in, well, let's call it Spain. Let's stay there. We don't need to go any further. So what's the story? Because the truth is that you have a lot of dubbed content, right? Which is not the case in Portugal. For us to have things dubbed into European Portuguese is, I'd say, less than probably only things for children. And even then, not always. But what we have is things dubbed into Brazilian Portuguese or into Spanish, usually from South America. So this is, we buy these days those Turkish shows dubbed by Mexicans. I can hear them. So so what's the story? What kind of market do you have as a Spanish person living in Spain, working in the Spanish audiovisual? Is it based on subtitles or is it being very strong? How did you manage that stuff?
Back in the day, it was. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was very strong for, as you are saying, we needed to translate the scripts for dubbing. So that was a huge thing. And it still is. Mm-hmm. Because
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner. So you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
The situation has improved and changed a lot, and English proficiency is way better now in Spain, but it's far from good or very good. So we still need the shows to be dubbed. And then for some people, it's difficult. I'm thinking, for example, of my parents. Mm-hmm. They are literate people who can read different languages, but for them, it's difficult to be reading subtitles when they get to an age. So I also did a lot of subtitling. And nowadays, when I was doing all these things, Netflix didn't exist, or at least as we know it nowadays.
Definitely not. I also lived close to their headquarters. And I remember when they originally were a company that had red boxes that had DVDs in them in supermarkets. And you would just, I guess, drop coins, something like that, pay with a credit card, something like this. I still remember those boxes, definitely at least until 2008 or 2009. So that's what they did before.
So at the time, those people who were, because I'm talking more or less that year, 2007, 2008, 2009.
Mm, yeah, I guess they were still not as we see them today, for sure. They were just getting started.
Yeah, so it was the content that you could, of course, that you could load in your DVDs when you bought DVDs and or extra content, things like that. So we did a lot of that, and it was, and it is still nowadays, a huge market. I think it's going to be somehow reduced with AI, at least in part or for some type of content. But yeah, it was a huge thing. It was not well paid as it is nowadays, but for someone who has just finished his studies, or I think it was for me, it was okay. It was fun. I was learning a lot. I was watching movies, was watching TV shows. So yeah.
Mm-hmm. So what happened after this more? Did you do this continuously, like all the time, even if you were doing something else, you still did projects here and there, right? I guess it's everybody's case.
Yeah, I continued with audiovisual translation till, I don't know, I mean, it was recently, because it's actually something that I love doing. So, but it takes a lot of time when you are translating movies, I mean, scripts for dubbing for movies, even if the movie is very short, that's something that
people Arnold Schwarzenegger and actors like that are the best, right?
Oh, yeah. Those movies where they don't talk. I have translated some documentaries about fishing. Those were the best, because the script just has two or three words. But in any case, you had to watch the full thing, because sometimes when they are fishing, they say something that is not scripted. So, but yeah, I mean,
there's more thinking than talking, probably. So those are the good ones. Yeah. Anybody who has done audiovisual translation is always wishing for action movies or things like that, where actors who cannot really speak English. So that's really your preference, right?
but then something that also very few people know is that even if you are a very good translator, or you believe you have done a great job translating something, then there is another person who takes what you have done and he or she is going to destroy everything and add here things there. I mean, I'm not talking about the dubbing director, but another person who usually is before that says, okay, yeah, but here I will say this or that thing that way. So when you go to the cinema to see,
it's not your version anymore.
No, it has nothing to do with what you did. Sometimes, I mean, they are, their proposals are way better than yours. Some other times they just ruin or spoil it. But yeah, that's how it works in that industry.
Yeah, for sure. So then after that bigger part of your time dedicated to this type of projects, so what happened? What did you do next? Did you work at an LSP? Did you...
I was, I don't know. I have been working, I have been working as a freelance translator until recently, actually, for the Spanish standardization body. So for INOR at that time, and I translated a lot of technical standards, European standards. I was actually then, I was hired by infrastructure company, being in charge of translation, standardization, things like that. I learned a lot there. I was part of working groups in CENELECSEN, which are European committees for electrotechnical staff. And that was way difficult at the time of meeting. And actually, sometimes I had to go with some super big bosses, and I had to interpret for them, even if I am not an interpreter. But, well, I had to do that job. And that was very difficult because they didn't talk about normal things, but yeah, imagine physics, maths, and super complicated stuff. That was very, very difficult for me to understand and then to. And I have been doing that for a lot of time, for quite a lot of time, until I ran out of time and I didn't have more time to be doing freelance translations. And
then you became a localization manager. Is that what it is?
I was a project manager for a company that did mainly things related to the audiovisual industries for a lot of years, and that was nice. Very bad payment conditions, but I mean, again, I learned a lot. So I try always to look at the positive side.
We have to.
But I learned a lot. I also had the opportunity to translate some movies, something that I liked. I mean, that's the worst thing, that they know you like it, so they say, oh yeah, you like it, then you
just do it.
Yes. And say, well, okay. So that was the situation for a lot of years, but I learned a lot.
Yeah, I guess it's the type of work you're never ready for. I mean, compared to other types of translation, just anything can come your way and you never know it. Sometimes it's a super basic type of dialogue and all of a sudden they just use this expression or talk about this particular subject. And then what are you going to do? Like spend hours just looking for that stuff. And it's fun. I particularly like reality shows, to be honest.
Oh. Those are the worst.
There's a lot of strings, but it's a lot of fun. I mean, because I mean, living in the States and all of that, I was kind of used to that. I was there when the Kardashians were born as a show in 2007, so I kind of have that nostalgia. I still watch them. So it's one of my guilty pleasures. Like I say, I'm always studying. That's what I'm doing. I mean, can you blame me for that? I have to study my English.
About storage rooms and
that
we rebuild things.
Yes. The storage rooms, the storage wars when they buy those storage rooms that have been abandoned, right?
People talking over the other, and it's impossible. Not impossible.
I watch all of that stuff for research. You know. That's what I do.
That's a pain to translate.
So yeah, it's a reality show. I will know it for sure. Good or bad. I'll know everything.
I mean, it was okay.
It can be very tricky sometimes. Just with a little bit of this or that, you can be, wow, like a lot of work and it's complicated. So then the localization management was a little bit more with less surprises, I suppose, right? Yeah. So that's when your SEO and all these things came into your life, right?
Yeah, more recently I became localization manager for Formlabs, which is a 3D printing company in Germany. Then, of course, I learned during my whole career, I learned about how to position things better online. And of course, SEO has changed a lot. From the days we started. So I remember the very early days of the internet, and where people just pasted like a list of 2,000 words on a web page to drive traffic there, because it worked like that. And nowadays that wouldn't work at all. But yes, I learned a lot about SEO. Then I had really great colleagues at different companies that they also taught me a lot about SEO, how to improve, how to our content, how to optimize it for SEO. And then you see the results, and you see it in combination with localization and what you can achieve when you know about it. And that was great. Yeah, that part of localization management, which is the same I'm doing now, where I provide solutions or that's how I define myself. Provide solutions to problems. So I am a solution maker. I do not say problem solver, because problem is a negative word, but it's a solution. So when there is a solution that needs to be solved, I am there. And that's what I do. I optimize processes, I implement processes, I study, I research what we do, and then what I find is the best solutions for the company to improve our performance and to optimize everything.
Mm-hmm. So I met you because of SEO, really. I saw an ad, it was probably a year and a half ago, I would say, something like that. And so that was my first contact with, I was kind of new to LinkedIn and all of that stuff. New, kind of new. I mean, I had been there forever, but since 2007, I guess that they had the first or eight, or I actually went to their headquarters when they were starting, because the headquarters were still 12 people, I think. And they were at the same area where you had the Google buildings, right? There was Google, Google, Google. And then at the end of it, there was a building for LinkedIn. So they were still small. But I mean, I've had a profile for a long time, but really started looking at it properly only in the last year and a half or something. And then that's what happened. I saw an ad for Translastar's bootcamp. And I was like, bootcamp? Yeah. It sounded scary. But then I was like, what the hell is this? Let me see what this is. This is SEO. And of course, I have been working for, I always say this, it's one of my funny stories, I guess, that I started working for this adult company. It was an umbrella company that had a lot of companies, but about, I guess, 99 at the time, 2010. But they hired me for the marketing department. And my job was to take care of SEO. Okay, for Portuguese and all that stuff. So first, there was a lot of study to be done, right, about the subject. So that, let's say that I can talk about it, right?
What people are looking for, which is the...
What are people looking for? Exactly, right? Yeah. So, but it worked in a very, like you said, very simple way. It was basically lists of keywords, positive keywords, negative keywords. So I was introduced to this concept of negative keywords. It's basically the keywords you don't want people to type to find you, basically. Yeah. So in this type of industry, it was very interesting how people thought about this and all of that. So I had a lot of meetings about about the content, and it was very interesting. My first interview was funny because it was three guys. They just locked me in a room. How comfortable are you with adult content? I had no idea if it was that, because when they called me, they didn't say what it was for. So I knew it was Portuguese, but that's all I knew. So it was interesting. And it was an interesting time. People working there had all sorts of jobs, I mean, or backgrounds. Some of them were like exotic dancers. Other were burlesque dancers. But then others were like full-blown corporate people. So it was a lot of fun. It was very interesting. So that was my introduction to SEO.
But then when I saw, for sure.
They actually owned, you know, cams.com and one thing that was called, probably doesn't exist anymore, Facebook of Love. Strange stuff
That. Yeah, those are super big industries, very profitable. So, I mean.
Yes, for sure. So we were in the pay-per-click thing and, you know, that kind of stuff. So I kind of was introduced to the whole world. And after that, I went to work for Google. So that came in handy. It was all in the family. So that was good. But then when I saw the ad, I was like, oh, I bet 10 years or 11 or whatever after this situation in my life, this is probably not the same, right? So that's the reason why I decided to do the bootcamp. And I was like, oh my God. Well, one thing has nothing to do with the other. Of course, it's a lot more complicated. So, but the question is, I saw on LinkedIn that you started Translastars in 2019. So was it when you founded the thing and then nothing happened, you had to do your planning, all of that? Or did you start full-blown immediately in 2019? And how did this idea come about, since the pandemic is what brought all sorts of people to do that, but you did it apparently at least a good year or a year and a half before the big boom of online courses?
Yeah, I have always liked teaching, and I was a professor at university, also head of studies. And that's something that I wanted to combine with my knowledge of translation, localization, project management skills. And I said, okay, let's do something that can combine those things without having to use. I also was working for this other company as a project manager, and there I developed some courses, and I said, okay, now that I have my own company, I can further develop this without having to be locked in a room or whatever. I mean, in the sense that you don't need to invite people to go to a place, but they can just take courses online. And that was the idea. That was how everything started. And I mean, at the same time, I was working as a localization manager, and it's something that I'm still doing, and I like to do it because I like to be connected with the real world of translation. So I don't want to be disconnected of that. And I mean, in the end, I what I have achieved is to create something that it's it's somehow self-service, in the sense that we don't need to be behind the curtains doing a lot of things. Of course, there is a lot of work, but I mean, everything, all the process is automated. So you want a course, you buy it, or you want a subscription plan, you buy it, and everything works pretty well automatically. So then it's more the job of getting in touch with people, talking to professionals to see if they're interested in.
So what was the first course? It was definitely not a bootcamp, because I suppose you have to be, you already have to have some practice to get into that. So what was the first, was it a shorter thing? Was it yourself? Did you create it, produce, present it, all of those things, I suppose?
It was a whole adventure. My idea, I had a plan. And the plan was, okay, we are going to start with the Spanish platform, then we will go to Italian, and then with the .com one. And that's what we did. We had plans, or I had plans for another one, which was the German one, but we never did that. And then the Spanish one started with a course that I created on translation. It's more or less technical translation, which is translation of European standards. Technical translation in the end, and then another one or two courses about audiovisual translation that I didn't create. It was someone who has worked with me in the previous companies, and then many other courses came. So but those were the first ones.
Yeah, so that's cool. Of course, you start with what is closest to you. It makes totally makes sense. But then, why did you think about the Spanish and Italian? I'm most curious about the Italian one. The Spanish one I can understand. But why do you have an Italian platform, a specific one? Because I found it the other day.
The idea was, okay, I'm half Italian, or my family, some parts of my family come from.
So your last name sounds a little bit more towards that, right?
Yeah.
So it's not your last name, because, you know, it's the difference between Portuguese people and Spanish people and all that, because your mother's name is at the end. In my case, it's my father. So,
So what I did was, I mean, it was a plan also to market that with big GDP. So I thought of a Spanish, because it's not only for Spain, right? It's
of course. That one makes sense to me.
First language. So then I said, okay, Italian, which is, let's say, my second language, let's open it there as well. It's a very strong country in terms of finance, and also there was not a lot of competition there, so I saw it as an opportunity. And then we went for the .com one, just to try to get to more people all over the world. Also, because we didn't see that there was something like what we were offering with courses in so many languages and with so many different fields of specialty. I mean, of course, there are other platforms doing some things which are similar, and they are doing a great job. But we are different.
So these days, how do you decide what kind of subjects you need to have tackled, and how do you decide who to invite for that? Because it's not easy. And I've been taking advantage of what you do, and actually have had on the podcast people who have created courses for you. It's kind of also a good way for me to look for people. So
I love that you invite them. That's also very good for translators, because people make the connect the dots, and that's okay.
Yes, of course. The idea is to connect dots always.
Sorry, what was the question again?
The question is these days that you invite people, how do you find them? How do you decide, like, what kind of subject I'm not going to tackle this time, and who's going to do it?
So what I do is I do a lot of active listening on social media. I do a lot of, I read a lot, and I am particularly myself interested in many topics related to localization. I know the industry, how the industry goes. I attend events. Mm-hmm. So I know what are the trends, where the industry is going, what is needed. So that's what I try to offer to our students, something that is going to be useful for them for now, the future. So yeah, that's basically it. Then what I do is I am connected to many people in the industry. Some other people recommend me professionals that could collaborate with us, and I go to them on LinkedIn. I talk to them and I say, hey, I would like to collaborate with you. I've seen your profile, I've seen your career, and I like it, and it will be great if you could share your expertise with other people. So some of them, they say, oh yeah, sure, let's do it. It's something new. It will make me go out of my comfort zone. For some other people, I mean, I don't know, I may have talked to hundreds of people already, and everyone has been super polite. Even if they refuse, they tell me, look, it's not something for me. It's I would love to, but I'm not prepared. I don't feel prepared to do that. So it's okay, of course, maybe in the future. So, but yes, that's what I do. I try to see what is needed in the industry, and I try to offer courses that match those needs or that could upskill people to get better positions or better payment or better salaries, things like that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, yeah, I don't know if there's anyone in the industry that does exactly the bootcamp format, for example, because I think what Diego Perez did mm-hmm. was also with that format, and that was about the video game localization. And now I know that maybe you have something else coming before that, but I know that, so I've had it on the podcast too, Maria Virginia, and I always say Virginia in Spanish, it sounds better, I guess. She will be doing the course about subtitling, right? Yeah. So we talked a little bit about that on the podcast. So, I mean, but it's a pretty intense format. I mean, when you did it, when I attended the bootcamp, it was you who were there, and it was like, it felt so breezy for you. Like, okay, here we are, 10 hours this week, every single day for 2 hours. Already when my day is super, super long at 6 p.m, and here I am. So everything is, it's like felt like the day was just starting and you were like super fresh and all of that. So I was like, wow, it's not for everyone to actually be able to do this in 10 hours. So intense.
I mean, for me, it energizes me to mm-hmm. do something like that, to get in touch with other professionals like me, and to share knowledge. That's something that for me it gives me life. I love it. Then I must say that when you have a family, it is more complicated, because I need to ask my wife also to, okay, so you're going to be like 2 hours somehow alone, so I cannot take care of children.
Yeah.
And that makes things a little bit complicated in a family situation when children are very, I mean, my daughters are 3 years old and 1 year old. So
my son is 3 years old. So yeah. You only had one when I did the bootcamp.
Yeah. So yeah, those situations are somehow and sometimes difficult to handle, but I mean, when you love it and when you do something with passion, I think it's, that's great. And I love what I do.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, everybody liked it. I think that's what I've always heard. I loved it. And that's how I started following everything that you do. I mean, your work, obviously. And this is why I know that now you're working with someone I've worked with Alexander, and in the Localization Management Academy, right? So it's called that. So it's your latest baby. Let's call it that.
Well, the latest baby is going to be announced tomorrow.
Oh, and that's a new baby.
Yeah, that's a new baby. That's going to, I hope it's something huge. But yes, the latest one was the Localization Management Academy, which has worked super well. I'm super proud of everything that people have presented there. We had some of the best professionals from the industry, so I feel honored that they accepted our invite to participate in the program. And it's a program to upskill professionals, translators, linguists, or whomever, to become localization managers, project managers, localization managers. So I think that's it's a great course because you have people like Alexander, you have people like Miguel Sepúlveda, even my manager in at Sinch, Bea Redonda, she's fantastic, not only because she's my manager, but she's great. And we have had a group of professionals that deliver content, deliver some of the best content I have ever watched or followed. So I mean, it was fantastic. It was really, really fantastic. And I know that people who have taken the course, they are super happy, and they truly appreciated the knowledge they acquired. And I
is
think
it like the bootcamp format, or is it once a week? Is it how does that go?
It's 1 month, and in this case, so 4 weeks, and it's 2 hours every day plus 3 hours.
2 hours every day for a whole month?
Yeah.
That's how you like doing it. I see now. There's a trend. It's like that. It's only a week. No. Now it's going to be a whole month, and next time a whole trimester.
That's a good point, because what we have seen is that people prefer to have longer courses than very short ones. So we tend to offer like this intro too, but people do not like that. They prefer something like, okay, if you are going to sell me something, sell me the full thing, not just an intro too. So that's why we do something that truly covers what we say we are covering. And it is that format. It's at 6 p.m.
It's your thing.
So usually good time for people in Europe and in the US, for example, or America to watch it, to attend it. And it has worked very, very, very well.
Is it 1 week per specialist, or are they? No.
There are different specialists who have, for example, some people have 2 hours. Some people have, for example, we had Morana Peric, and she was at that time the localization manager, localization and UX manager at Freenow, this super big company for taxis, deliveries, things like that. Mm-hmm. She has now moved to Deeple. And she, for example, was 2 hours, while we had other people who were 6 hours, like my manager, Bea, who was talking about content and the relation of content with localization, SEO, and localization. I have learned a lot about SEO from Bea, and it was fantastic. You see it at a different level, in the sense that it's more what you get is strategic skills. So you learn to somehow to how to sell what the localization team is doing to management in a company. So that's interesting. And then, of course, you learn how to manage things and how to approach different problem situations and the solutions you can provide.
Mm-hmm. Wow. There's a lot. I mean, if people need training, they will come to you and you can provide them with all sorts of things, because at least in Translate Stars, which I know better, I know that you have a lot of subjects, a lot of perspectives, a lot of different people. So it's really, really good. And usually they either were somehow popular people or they became popular, because I can tell, because I've been following him now, that I found Diego because of your Translate Stars course. And then it was amazing how things have changed for him. So I guess that was an amazing boost, not only for the people who were attending the bootcamp, but definitely for him also as a professional. So I can see what that does to people. So that is pretty nice. So now that I know that you will have news, I will leave it here, and maybe we need to talk in the near future.
Hopefully, yes.
Because by the time that this comes out, we will already know what the new baby is, because this was it's going to be only the first week of probably January or so. So that's going to be that. So thank you so much, Alfonso. I love it. Sounds very good. Half in Spanish, half in Italian. It's almost a bit like that. Thank you so much. I know you have a super busy schedule, life with kids and a lot of work and working for a lot of companies and having a lot of companies. So it's your empire, the Alfonso empire. So thank you so much for this. And I hope to talk to you very soon about new projects and other things.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Have a good day.
You too. Bye.